Yeah. All right, Sag and Cheryl just joined.
Hi, Sag. It's Mike. I'm here.
Hi, Mike.
Hi, Sag. Hey. It's Judy. I'm here. And Nolan.
Sue Holland. Sue Clive is here.
Okay.
Ken Marcella, I'm here.
Hey, Ken.
Yeah, this is Bob Marshall.
Okay, I don't know. We don't really know how many are expected to join, so.
Hi, Cheryl just joined.
So why don't we just give people another minute or two, and then we'll go ahead and get started. Really appreciate Mike basically doing this call, and purpose of this call is just to brief people on what the overall study results that we did were, and then Ken's on, so he can. So Mike did the what I call the electronic hydration analysis, or BIA, I think is the more formal name. We did, you know, traditional blood work, which Mike will explain, and then Ken developed a series of questions, and we'll let Ken talk about those. And then there are going to be a couple other tests done. Jeannie Waldron is going to look at the fibrinogen analysis to see whether that's a meaningful indicator or not. That's something that we really just don't know for our endurance horses. Why don't we at this stage, let's see, we'll maybe give one more minute for people to join and then go ahead and get started. And while we're doing that, let me thank all of you who participated. We really appreciate this. Hopefully the results you get on your own horses will be meaningful. I'd like to thank Mike for putting all that together and giving you all the great write-ups you've already gotten electronically. And then we've provided a veterinarian contact for each of you to get into more detailed one-on-one discussions, which would be, not on this call, but one-on-one with the veterinarian contact, although you've got general questions, please do raise them. And we would encourage you also to discuss the results with your personal veterinarian so that they're familiar with endurance horses and the unique demands and stresses we put on our endurance horses. I think the one thing we can say looking at the results is good weather helps. You know, that from a scientific study standpoint, it probably would have been more meaningful if we'd had, weather in the high 80s with humidity the same. But I think from a ride standpoint, all of us are thankful the weather was favorable, but it didn't show up. I think in general, the results look pretty darn good. Okay, why don't we get, I'll just turn it over to Mike and let Mike take it. Mike is a professor at the University of Guelph and has been involved in endurance horses for, I don't know, many years. I know, Mike, whether it was 2000, 2001, you did the first blood work at Biltmore. And since then, Mike has developed a lot of innovative ideas, particularly the electronic body index analysis or biometric index analysis. So with that, I'll turn it over to Mike.
Very good. Thank you, Sag, and hello, everybody. With horses, endurance horses, probably about 17 years now. And it was probably a good thing that Sag said that the weather was good because when, assessing the hydration of these horses, there was clearly a large number of the horses that participated at all levels of the rides. That encountered some moderate, a few cases, some severe dehydration. So it still points to the fact that even though this research has been sort of ongoing for nearly 20 years and 30 years overall in terms of research as a research looking into endurance as a discipline and recognizing the dehydration that occurs, a lot of horses and riders are still running into some problems trying to maintain hydration with their horses. So I think that was one of the first clear things that came through was that a lot of the horses were still getting moderate dehydration during the ride, and that points to the fact that there are things that maybe we could do better in terms of education and implementation to better maintain hydration during the ride. The other thing that struck me was that based on the plasma protein concentrations, which in endurance horses tend to be on the low side of the clinically normal range, on average the horses at the Biltmore were on the high normal side, again indicating a dehydration that resulted from the transport stress. There were probably five or six horses out of the entire group that had a plasma protein that was below 6.5 grams per deciliter, which I would consider to be, sort of high normal. So only a handful that were below that. So again, that points to maybe some things that could be done a little bit better. So given that, though, you know, the horses that, despite the dehydration, they did well through the ride, and they seemed to perform fairly well. And again, that I think that's a testament to how tolerant and how well-trained, aerobically trained, exercise-trained these horses are. But at the same time, it also points to the fact that, you know, maybe they could be doing a lot better if we were able to meet their hydration needs a little bit better. So what I did with the hydration assessments, with the reports that you have, is I looked at each horse, looked at the blood work, and matched that up with scale weights, get an idea of what the hydration should be at the pre-ride. We had, with the number of horses, we had scale weights and BIA data at times in extra times compared to the blood sample work. Well, those have been included in and give us a bit of an extra handle on hydration. In the bioelectrical impedance analysis, the hydration monitoring instrumentation, it didn't really work during the ride. It worked before the ride, and it seemed to work reasonably well after the ride. I think during the ride there are too many uncontrolled variables with respect to how much and when horses are drinking and whether it has electrolytes in the water and so those numbers were sort of all over the place. So I guess at this point, I would just like to open it up to any questions or comments that anybody might have.
Yeah, hey, this is Megan Savory without a voice.
Hi, Megan.
Hi, I'm not sure if this is a question or a comment. I'm a rider and a veterinarian. I had two horses in your study. I had a third horse in the ride, but it doesn't respond well to needles, so I saved you the drama. But of the two that I had in the ride, your comment on their paperwork was that you felt that they came into the ride dehydrated, and your assessment was by about 100 liters. My mathematics says 100 liters is 100 kilograms, which is about 220 pounds. Both of these horses came to the pre-ride weighing more than they normally do. So I'm not sure how to assess your assessment. You were saying that a 7.1 you felt was dehydrated, and I felt based on knowing these two horses, both from riding, training, veterinary standpoint, I felt that they were both pretty much within their normal range, and certainly weight-wise, they were normal.
So the math that goes into that is based on the plasma protein concentration only. So it is a rough estimate. And when I see, you know, that a number like 100 kilograms is coming up, then clearly one can't take that number very seriously.
Okay.
The thing is, it would be really useful to have a plasma protein concentration measurement on your horses when you are absolutely sure that horse is euhydrated, because then you have a baseline, you have a benchmark on which to compare plasma protein concentration changes. What it does point to is that there was some sort of extracellular dehydration of some magnitude, but it's an unknown magnitude because we don't have a benchmark. So that's really all that indicates at that point. Now, with respect to the scale weights, at the pre-ride, again, what you need to have, and I don't have access, is what is the weight of your horses when you know that when those horses are completely dehydrated. And that, again, that's very useful information to have when you're going to a ride where there are scales, so that you know right away that, you know, compared to your at-home completely hydrated weight, what is the weight of your horse at a ride. So that's what could be done better in terms of trying to get a handle on the pre-ride status.
This is Ken, Marcella, and I'm glad Megan brought that up, because in looking at some of the paperwork with the people that have contacted me about looking at it, that's been one of the big questions in terms of exactly what the total proteins need to, as far as the dehydration status. Most of the riders feel like their horses were not appreciably dehydrated pre-ride. My question, I guess, is there any correlation between the total proteins and hematocrit if you're correlating dehydration, or does that not help you at all?
No, not so much in a resting horse. Once the dehydration gets quite severe, then that definitely comes out. And I you can see that if you look at the exercise data carefully,
right,
and you look at the changes in the hematocrit and the subsequent tables in the reports. I didn't bring that out at this point because I wanted to keep the assessment pretty straightforward for all of the riders, and, you know, bringing in more variables and
sure.
Didn't work.
As veterinarians, that's one area that we'd always kind of use as a correlative point to assess changes throughout the course of the ride. But
yeah.
as from your standpoint, in a resting horse, not much correlation. So if you have a decreased a total protein that indicates dehydration, and yet hematocrit is okay, that's not that doesn't have much bearing on a pre-ride sample.
No, that's right. The hematocrit can still be down around 30, 33, which is where it should be for endurance horses. And then again, if you look at all of those reports, you see very few resting hematocrits that are that low, and some of them, resting ones, are as high as 40, 45. The thing there is you don't know how much of that is due to dehydration and how much is due to, you know, a little bit of excitement, because all you need is a little bit of adrenaline, and you get some dumping of red cells from the spleen. You don't need a lot.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So it's hematocrit in itself is not a very good indicator.
It's interesting that the biggest comment I've heard is that
virtually every resting, well, like at rest, unexcited endurance horse,
right,
dehydrated, will have a hematocrit less than 35.
And am I right in that? Because I know, you know, if you, I think I was in this situation many years ago where, you know, blood work was drawn on our endurance horses, and we were told they were anemic because of that.
Right.
But in reality, that's good because endurance horses have red blood cells that have a lot of surface area, and therefore are more efficient. Is that, am I correct in that or not?
Well, they seem to have, I don't think that's quite right. And if you look at any really well-trained horse, whether it's an Arabian horse or a standardbred or a thoroughbred, their resting hematocrits are usually quite low, down, you know, below 35, if, you know, when they're well-trained. So the other thing is that the endurance horses have a very high capacity for storing red cells in the spleen. So, and that's part of the aerobic training response, is to have large number of red cells and a very high ability to store those red cells, so that when you need to call on more red cells to deliver, you know, to deliver oxygen to the muscles, it's there. You can call on it.
Basically, the splenic reserve is what it is, and I see that in athletes and non-athletes. I do a fair amount of backyard horses, and they have very low hematocrit. I put them on a lunge rope, go around, you know, three times, and suddenly their hematocrit skyrockets.
Yeah, So,
yeah, trying to read those two numbers together is not easy in these guys.
Yeah, in an untrained backyard horse, the hematocrits tend to be closer to 40 than to 35, 30.
This is a silent moment. I just wanted to make a comment about something that was very interesting to me. My horse Shamwari has done about, I think, 800 or 900 now, one of which included the World Equestrian Games. and without fail, at the third or fourth stop, he always puts his head down and out goes to sleep for 10 minutes. Well, this blood work showed he had very low blood glucose at that stop. So that was very interesting and very informative to me.
Yeah, well, that goes hand in hand. That's pretty neat because, you know, when we get hypoglycemic, that's exactly how we feel too. We feel very tired and feel sleepy. So that's pretty interesting. Yeah, so I guess your horse is probably starting to run a little bit low on energy by that point. But you know, the horse turned right around in the last part of the ride.
Right, right. But it was interesting that both of my horses that are on the same feed schedule, the same electrolyte schedule, the same training schedule, the same everything, had the same blood glucose drop at the same stop.
Yeah.
So that was interesting to me.
So what are you going to try to do next time? Are you going to try to prevent that?
I don't know. You know, the South African veterinarian that I worked with at the WEG, he says they're all just 100% using the disaccharides at every stop. And I was a little bit hesitant to do that, but now I'm thinking maybe they're on the right track.
Yeah, the downside with that is you're more prone to getting the ups and the downs, and it's the downs that really get you when they happen. And probably going with a more complex carbohydrate to give energy in the long term might be something to look at.
Yeah, but why is it that one stop? Why do they pick up after that?
Yeah, well, it's a cumulative effect, right? So, something has to happen, and since it's happening in both horses at the same time, you sort of have to look at, you know, how much you're giving and when you're giving it during the parts of the ride that lead up to there. So that's the window of opportunity to try to get that turned around.
Right.
So I don't know. If I recall, you know, I don't recall for your horse for sure. I'd have to look up the number. But a lot of the speeds for the horses were faster in the first part of the ride, in the first loops. And it doesn't take, you know, a big difference in speed in the first part of the ride to sort of bring you a little bit over a threshold where you're starting to rely a lot more on carbohydrates than on fats to provide energy to the working muscles. And so even just dropping down speed a little bit in the last half of the ride can really make a big difference in terms of which fuels the muscles are using.
Mike, explain that a little bit more. So if you drop that speed down, then they can better, is what you're saying? Or?
Yeah, well, when muscles are working at low to moderate intensities, they're using mostly fats as a fuel source. And as soon as you go up to moderate to high intensities, then you're increasing the reliance on carbohydrates as a fuel source. So when glucose becomes low, that's usually an indication that we're starting to rely very heavily on carbohydrate as a fuel source. So maybe 60 or 70% of the fuel is coming from carbohydrate and 30 or 40% from the fat. At rest, nearly 60% or more of the fuel is actually coming from fat oxidation by muscles, and about 40% from carbohydrate. So that sort of switches around with the as you get progressive increases in exercise intensity.
So that would translate into I think what I'm hearing you say, and this is important insight, that it is that to prevent the horse, let's see, now said another way, it's very easy to put that horse over the edge into a low blood sugar situation, and therefore the horse is going to back off or something on you by either slightly increasing the speed or I assume the same thing, slightly increasing the elevation. In other words, going from a flat or downhill to an uphill could easily make you go from...
That's right. That will increase the carbohydrate requirement to provide the energy for the muscles. Yeah.
Right. And if we think about Megan's horse here, then probably through the first half of the race, the horses have enough carbohydrate to sustain this faster pace, and then they've used up sort of the carbohydrate reserves, and so they have to switch over to another fuel mechanism.
Yeah, so they won't have used them all up, but they will have used, you know, quite a bit. And when the blood glucose starts falling, that's an indication that the liver stores of glycogen are starting to run low, because what happens is the glycogen in the liver is broken down to glucose, and that glucose is released into the blood, and then the muscles take up that glucose from the blood to use it as fuel. But at the same time, the muscle is also relying on its own glycogen stores to provide energy. So if blood glucose gets low, that's usually also an indication that the carbohydrate reserves in the muscle are starting to run low. So it's not that you've run out, but you're starting to run low. And so it's indicating that, you know, nutritionally, maybe there are some things that could be done before the ride and during the early part of the ride to provide additional carbohydrate and forms of complex carbohydrates. And the reason I say that is that there are people that are doing carbohydrate loading. The problem with that is that you have to, if you're going to start doing it in a 100-mile ride, you have to be religious with doing it. Otherwise, you run into the hypoglycemia that occurs after the highs. And what you need to do with carbohydrate loading is absolutely avoid those, which basically means you need to supplement carbohydrates every 45 to 60 minutes during the entire ride.
Yeah, it's ironic. These rides that are flat, fast horses with fast paces, and you're coming into the hold every hour and a half or so,
yeah,
are actually maybe easier. It's easier to maintain that balance than it is sort of some of our classic rides where it may be 2.5 or 3 hours between holds because the training is so rough or whatever.
Yeah, so an hour and a half is too long to go between carbohydrate loads if you're using carbohydrate loading as a strategy. And so that won't work. You'd have to do, you know, an additional load somewhere in between.
Right. But what I was trying to articulate was that if you have your holds coming up every hour and a quarter to hour and a half, at least the horses are having a chance to get more in their system that will serve them later in the ride.
Absolutely, yeah. I think it's beneficial both in terms of, you know, water, electrolytes, and the other nutrients, energy nutrients that it needs to sustain, a high level of performance, yeah.
Is there any... I'm playing.
Oh, well, I was hypothetically, I watched a friend last week at Fort House who was doing the 100th, and the horse started out at a very moderate pace because it was its first 100, and it had really good energy. After the first 50, since he was doing so well, she picked up the pace, and everything looked pretty glorious till 85 miles. And when she came in, she passed her vet, checked the energy seal, still seemed to be good, except he got really, really stiff and was full for stiffness. Were her stores of, had she just burned up everything to the point that his muscles were locking down, or what was going on?
Did you say the horse became really stiff?
Really stiff, yeah.
Yeah, that's probably hydration and not so much on the energy side.
Mm-hmm.
So the stiffness and the muscle cramping and the tightness, that's usually associated with quite a bit of water and electrolyte loss.
Okay.
Now, at the same time, there's clearly going to have been, you know, quite a bit of carbohydrate used as well with the, with the speeds that was sustaining. But it sort of goes hand in hand. But I would say the stiffness and is not so much from carbohydrate use, but from dehydration.
Okay. Now, do you think there was muscle damage done with him getting that stiff that quick when he, you know?
Stiffness, you can almost bet that the muscle enzymes in the blood are going to be elevated. So, you know, how much, I don't know. But, one quick indicator is to look at the urine, and if it's, uh, there's any brownish tinge to it, then that's a pretty good indicator.
That
there's muscle damage. But there's like in every horse in every 100-mile ride, there's going to be muscle damage because it's impossible to do a ride of that distance without having muscle damage. It's a tough ride. The thing is that muscle damage is a normal part of endurance exercise, and most people and horses recover from it very nicely unless it's excessive. And, you know, when we're looking at the reports from all of these horses, we see in every case that there are at least mild increases in the muscle enzymes and the plasma, and those are completely exercise normal responses. And by and large, you know, they're right back to normal values within a day or two, and with a few exceptions, with some dehydrated horses, there were some pretty big increases in muscle enzymes.
And there's some horses on the opposite end of the spectrum, too, with some of the urine work that we did over the last 2 years. We came up with a couple of very interesting horses that ended up with the typical myoglobinuria that cleared on its own by the next loop, and the horse never ended up with any problems and finished actually doing really well at certain rides. And there's a little bit more that we don't really know about why those particular horses can tolerate it better. So there's got to be a lot of individual physiologic response to that.
Yeah,
the horses having problems, but
that could be that there was some muscle damage that occurred early on in the ride. And, you know, once it's damaged, it's damaged. And as long as you don't go on damaging more muscles, then that's basically cleared and taken care of, and you can move on. Horses can tolerate quite a bit. If there's a little bit of pain associated, you know, the endorphins kick in, and it's not even a noticeable thing after some point. So, it's neat that happens, and I think that's not too unusual.
Well, it'd be nice to know why those particular horses, from a treatment clinical standpoint, why those horses will show you clear urine, myoglobin urine, and then clear it and go on and do okay, versus the horse that's clear urine, myoglobin urine, and then hanging on a fluid bag. There's just got to be something different between those two when they're still maintaining taste too. So.
Yeah, like if you just gently pull a muscle somewhere that's damaged muscle, right? But that could be, you know, from a stumble or just like a hard work at some point, not associated with with the dehydration and the electrolyte losses, where that's where we tend to see the big increases in muscle enzymes. It tends to always be with a very metabolically challenged horse. So we can get muscle damage just from, you know, the normal activities that they do, aside from the dehydration things. But when it's coupled with dehydration, I think that's when you see these much more pronounced, longer-lasting effects.
Probably true.
This is Sharon Becker. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. I just wanted to say something that I thought was really interesting. I'm not a vet or anything, but I was really impressed with how my ride card mirrored the results you got. And I just think, you know, the vets at the rides just need a big attaboy, because, I mean, it's amazing. The dips and, you know, things like that just showed up right on my ride card with the scores that they gave me.
Yeah, that's a really neat observation, and I didn't look at the ride cards, and I still haven't looked at most of them. I looked at a few of them for horses that were in serious trouble, but that was it, because I didn't really know how I would, you know, how I could work it in with words, relating the ride card. So I thought I would just leave it up to the rider to look at the hydration report and compare that with the ride card, and that's very nice, and I hope there's a lot of agreement with what people are looking at between their ride cards. It points to the fact that, as well, that the veterinary criteria that are used for assessing horses during the ride are actually working very well.
It was spot on for me.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I have a comment. This is Sue Mullen about speaking of the ride cards. At the finish, on several of the metabolic fellows, cap refill, jug refill, skin tinting, I was given a numerical value. which is the first time, and I wasn't sure how to interpret that numerical value. Several were one, and one was one and a half.
Yeah, I guess Ken will have to answer that one.
Yeah, do you remember who was the initials on the card?
Initials is TT.
Yeah, Tom Timmons, I think, was using numerical.
Yeah, and I think some of that comes from differences between East Coast and West Coast. And the biggest thing that everyone wants to make sure of is that you're consistent throughout your judging. And whether you want to go A, B, C, D, everybody knows I like pluses and minuses when I'm doing mine, or whether you've got a five-point scale and you want to do it 1 to 5. The biggest thing in situations like that is look at the initials, go to the person and say, hey, what's your scale so I can tell and interpret it. And we'll have that discussion between us. Most of the time, you try to start out at the beginning and have everybody use the criteria, but I'd rather have vets use what they're comfortable with and consistent with, and it may just be that's his grading system. So I would, I would certainly get his email, send him a note and say, hey, I'm looking at my ride card. Can you give me your grading system so that I can correlate this to what I'm more familiar with, or give me an A, B, C scale versus your numerical scale? But I'm pretty sure that's all it is.
Okay.
Well, what else could it be?
I can't think of anything else that would be any different. It does allow you a little bit more leeway. What's the difference between an A and a B if that's all you can grade as criteria? I would prefer and try to do it with pluses and minuses to give me a little bit more leeway to upper half or lower half. And I guess if you take that the next step, you would do it with with numerical grade. But then what's a 1.4 versus a 1.6? And I think you can take it to the nth degree. It doesn't really give you useful information. But making the scale a little bit more specific, I think, is helpful.
I don't know if he's listening. I guess not. But Doc Otis would prefer to see a pass-fail on the grading. And this is Meg and McKen, sorry. And I told him I liked the letter system because it showed you a trend. If you start the day with an A and three holds along, you're at a C, it's something to watch for. So it would be nice, I think, as a rider to get the standardization of either the numeric or the alphabetic grading.
I have that debate with Otis all the time, and I think Otis has just been doing it so long that he's pretty clear on where horses are, and a lot of the calculations go on in his head and out pops the pass fail. But I agree with you for passing that information on to a rider to be able to do something with it. Or if I'm at a ride where we're not all standing in the same place and I can't walk over and say, hey, you saw it last loop, what do you think? If I'm at a different weight check or something, I want those checkpoints so that I can go back and see, hey, this horse is trending downhill or this horse is doing better and I can let it pass on. For me, that's really important for me as a veterinarian, I think.
Right. And for me, both as a vet and as a rider.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
And the minuses are helpful. If I get an A minus, I'm thinking, okay, I don't feel too good. It wasn't an A, so... I've never gotten an A plus.
That's like a carrot on the stick.
What would merit an A plus?
Yeah, I don't know. On the total protein with the range, is that range for all horses, for endurance horses? How is the normal range for that determined?
Yeah, the normal range is around 5.5 to 6.5, and that's the reference range that's used, or very close to the reference range that's used by the testing lab at the Ontario Veterinary Clinic at the University of Guelph.
How many of those are elite performance horses, though?
Yeah,
I guess my question comes down, if that range is a general lab range for all horses, how pertinent, and I guess I'm going back to the comments and questions I'm getting from riders about the hydration issue, how sure are we that horses at this level of performance or conditioning, that normal fits them?
Yeah, well-trained horses have a lower, when they're euhydrated, they have plasma proteins that are in the low range, not the high range. because one of the adaptations is an increase in circulating volume and in plasma volume. That's one of the adaptations to exercise training. So you see that in your high performance horses.
And it makes no difference whether it's speed training or endurance training.
No, doesn't make much difference at all. They do tend to be a little bit higher in if you're trotting or thoroughbred compared to endurance. The endurance tend again to be a little bit lower when they're dehydrated.
Okay.
But it's not, I would hesitate to say if it's a significant difference.
Okay.
So that's based on our observations on something like 700 endurance horses over the years.
Okay.
So, Mike, it's Teresa Finnerty here. Taking the heavier muscled horses, the potassium, we had a little bit of an issue on that horse that I ride. Potassium, will that be something that I'm always going to be dealing with him being a heavier muscled horse?
Was your horse one of the ones where the potassium was a little bit low at one or two points during the ride?
Just got dinged on the very first loop with the potassium.
Okay, so it had so one of the things that I'm not sure about is how soon after, how hard the horse worked during that loop. And how soon after the horse stopped exercising, the blood sample was taken. Because after, moderate intensity to high intensity exercise, during that time, plasma potassium is elevated. But then as soon as you stop, there's a very rapid movement of potassium back into the muscles that are recovering. And the blood potassium can stay low for quite a period of time before it comes back up. So that could just be reflecting normal, muscle, blood, potassium shifts and nothing to be concerned about. That's where I sort of hesitate to say that it's going to be, a useful indicator of anything, because it just could be the normal post-exercise shift of potassium back into muscle that's recovering.
Because he was normal, before, during, and after, it was just that one area that we had.
Yeah, so did you have a fairly hard first loop? Go out fast and work pretty good?
Loop whistle.
I didn't. Somehow I didn't get any of that. My phone went silent.
If you could repeat that, please. You broke up at the wrong right when we were listening for the answer.
Who needs to repeat, me or?
No, the Teresa.
Okay.
I was after the first one than the first one itself. I picked up speed after.
Okay. Yeah. So it just may be a normal post exercise potassium shift and nothing to worry about.
Okay. And then, like I say, his glucose was down a wee bit on the one check.
Yeah, and again, that's not unusual with endurance exercise. And, and you did get it turned around, indicating that he was eating well, at the hold. So he was able to keep his energy up for the rest of the ride.
I've got a question on the insulin levels in a horse on a bigger scale. And I guess here's where I'm going with this question. If I feed my horse at 8 o'clock in the morning, but I typically exercise between 10 or 12, and then he gets fed again at 6 at night, over a period of time, does that develop levels in that horse in terms of metabolic levels, insulin levels, that would stay with that pattern? And yes, when I'm feeding him at a race or if I'm riding it and exercising at different periods of the day, I can affect it by what I'm feeding him. But do I have a larger pattern that gets set in place by a longer time frame that you're working against? I'm going back to Megan's issue with her horses having low glucose at periods of time during the day. Can that happen in that context?
Yeah. The short answer is yes, but with a race situation, you're exercising and you're feeding frequently, right? So does diurnal and feeding variation responses that you see are quite different than what you'll see in a horse that's not exercised through the day.
I've had thoroughbred trainers tell me that they have had specific horses that would not train and run as well in the morning as in the evening, or if they were on a specific training schedule and they had to have a race that was going to be at a time outside that schedule, they had poor performances and actually had to train for whenever that race was going to occur. That's how I'm kind of asking, is there that kind of a training bias or a circadian rhythm metabolically, if you will, for some of these?
There is, and we published research on that. We've got two research papers that we published a number of years ago on that now. So you could look those up. But, yeah, there are diurnal changes that happen, on top of those, there are also very well-defined feeding responses. But when you look at diurnal changes in a horse that's unfed for 24 hours compared to a horse that's fed two or three times during that 24-hour period, there are some notable differences with respect to the feeding. Now, on top of those sort of dietary type changes, there could very well be other types of changes that affect performance. And I think we know that from people, too. We know that some people are morning people. They can be very productive in the morning, and other people are much more productive at night. So there's other things going on there that, that we don't really understand, that we don't really monitor, that could be affecting performance.
This is Darrellyn. On page 4, they highlighted in yellow my start dehydration is a minus 21.
Yep.
Then on the second column from there, the DBWL, not the percent column but the other one, they've highlighted three other numbers and columns, the bottom three, at minus 30.3. Well, the first one is 0.0.
What's the number?
And then and page 4.
Now, what's the number for your horse?
798. Sorry.
798. Yeah, okay. Yep. All right,
now,
looking that up.
Oh, good. All right. When you get there, tell me.
Yeah, I'm there now.
Okay. Why does it start? Why do you start at a zero? And what induces the difference in those numbers in the two columns with the DBW?
Yeah, so that's... the start dehydration, now let me have a look here. So with that indicating that there's based on the plasma protein concentration, it was at that time at the pre-ride, it was 6.4 grams per deciliter. And using what I assumed was a high normal plasma protein of 6.5, that generates an estimated starting dehydration of 21 liters. So that's what the start dehydration that's indicated in yellow. Now, that's a rough estimate. Your horse may actually have been dehydrated by less than that. But there's no way of knowing without having a benchmark plasma protein concentration for your horse. So the reason that I have those highlighted in yellow later on is that those are measured body water losses. These are based on the weights from the scale that are very severe. These are, that's 30 liters. What's that about? 30 liters to about 15 gallons. It's a lot. It's a lot of water loss. It's a lot of dehydration. So it's definitely in the severe category, and that's why it's highlighted yellow.
Okay.
It's highlighted yellow on the post ride because one would have hoped that there would have been a lot more rehydration during that overnight period. So that's a very severe and sustained dehydration.
And compared to the other horses, it was off.
It was the most severe and sustained. I think there was one horse that that hit around 35 liter loss, but came right back.
Okay.
This is Nolan, and I kind of eased my concerns about the potassium when you were talking about it being absorbed back into the muscles, but I'm rider number 79, and he registered with fairly low potassium for the entire ride. Any insight into that at all, or insight into what I should be concerned about?
Yeah, I'm just going to open that one up. 79, you said?
Correct.
So those are, and again, that could just be, fairly normal post-exercise potassium shifts that go back into the muscle. So what happens during moderate to high-intensity exercise is that muscles lose potassium, and then when you stop exercising, they regain that potassium. So when they lose it, a lot of it goes into the blood. And so if you measure it during the period of exercise itself, which we don't have here, they could be as high as, 5, 6, 7 millimoles per liter. But then when you stop exercising, the muscles take that potassium back up very quickly, and that results in a period of time when the plasma potassium concentrations are low. So that could just be, the situation that we're seeing with your horse. So it's hard to say without having any other baseline potassium values, sort of a historical picture, if you will.
Okay.
So, it's something to sort of keep an eye on if you ever have the ability to have some blood work done from when your horse is at rest. If a vet comes and takes a blood sample, have a look at the potassium values and see where they are.
Okay, and then I'm assuming that would be compared to another test that's right immediately after hard exercise.
I'm sorry, I missed the question. It faded out.
I guess that would be most relevant if it was also compared immediately after very hard exercise, because each of the blood tests was probably 15 minutes past, at least 15 minutes past the exercise point.
Yeah, so 15 to 20 minutes is usually around the time when you see, a fairly low number if it's going to happen. So it drops, within the first 10 to 15 minutes after exercise, and then it's very slowly will come back up. So it just could be that's, where your horse was when it was sampled. So it's really hard to say without having any historical picture to say, if that's any concern. So I wouldn't go there at this point without having some historical data on potassium for your horse.
Very good. Thanks for your input on that.
Are there further questions? Ken, you want to say a little bit about the POMS? And I know we haven't had time to analyze and correlate that with vet cards and all that yet, but...
Yeah, I haven't seen very much of the data as far as it came back, but I can certainly give you a little bit of idea what we wanted to look at. Some of this stuff comes from human swimmers and some of the other stuff that has been done more on the human side of it, looking at the, if you will, the mindset of an athlete in ways that we can easily translate to what we can know about our horses in terms of appetite, the way the horse is performing, the eagerness to get out and exercise, how well they sleep. Everybody who knows me knows I like to walk through camp late at night, and it's very interesting to walk through with a little pad of paper and watch horses sleep, and I'll put some numbers down, and you can look at the fitful, restless horses and the horses that are just zonked getting good sleep and try to correlate that to where they are on the next day. And obviously, I don't have enough numbers, but it's been interesting to me to look at that and then try to see if that is any kind of an indicator as to stress levels and performance predictions from that standpoint. That's kind of what we wanted to get at with some of these profile and mood state questions as we could translate it into people. And certainly on the racehorse thoroughbred side, if you speak to older trainers who are much more adept at working without a lot of the newer technical data and blood values, the the appetite, the attitude, how their willingness to go to the track, the vigor that the exercise rider reports that the horse has had, all that went into their decisions about where the horse was, overtraining, undertraining, working well. And that's kind of what we wanted to get a figure for. So I'd be really interested in seeing what the actual data looked like on some of those responses. Again, we had a good day, so it may not really scatter things out enough to really say anything about it, but we wanted to start looking at that at least to get a feel for where we were and whether those indicators would have any validity looking at it from a horse standpoint.
Okay, thank you. And similarly, on the progressive recoveries, we haven't finished analyzing that, and I think the good day and all meant there weren't a lot of indications, but there were some indications. You know, the horses that are starting to tire and to slow down and all, the progressive recoveries is one of the best indicators that, you know, which horses have a lot left and can really pick up the pace, you know, and run negative splits versus which ones are going to have to slow down. You know, if anybody on the call wants to do particular studies, you know, we'd be happy to provide, you know, data for all the horses, you know, without the horse's number, but the data. And as I said, we are, you know, going to be looking at all this data for studies. Mike's doing, you know, the more analytical stuff, and then Ken and myself and others are looking at the data we collected. Because I think our long-term goal here is to help each of us better understand our horses, but also get indicators that at the rise where we don't have all the fancy analysis, we still have simple tools that allow us to know, geez, our horses are great and we can got a lot left in the tank, or no, this really says, you know, my horse needs to really slow down, or I need to give the horse an extra 30 minutes of the hold because of what I'm seeing. Or, you know, my horse is time to call it a day or what have you, and my hope is that we'll get a lot more insight into those indicators that we can use in the same way that, you know, many years ago the cardiac recovery index was developed and turned out to be one of the best indicators that we've been able to use in the sport. So anybody wants to do studies with this data, just you know, get in touch with us. For any further questions?
No, it's good. We really appreciate you guys.
It's kind of good to hear that the ride cards are, you know, at least for some folks, really correlative, and it, you know, that may make us feel at least that the path we're taking is still fairly reasonable. I know a lot of people don't necessarily look at cards afterwards, but it might be an indicator that there's more information that we already have that we can pay more attention to too.
Well, it's been a pleasure, everybody, and it's been great participating with all aspects of this, and very, very informative and interesting looking at the results. So, I hope to get through the statistical part of it and get back to you all on with a little bit more later on.
Okay.
Okay.
Appreciate everything you're doing.
And again, many.
I have one tiny other question. It said that they didn't get my Saturday AM sample. And the horse was taken up there. Did it get lost, or do we have any idea why it wouldn't be noted?
The Saturday
798, the pre-race. Well, it shows the Friday PM and the Saturday AM. Neither one were taken.
Well, I have a Saturday AM. I have the Saturday AM weight, but I don't have.
Well, you had the weight that there was.
I don't have anything on Sunday morning. That's right.
Yeah.
Are you talking about?
Yeah. So there was no blood sample taken and no body weight, no BIA done.
That was on Sunday morning.
He did. Yeah, but he did go up. I know he went up there Sunday morning.
Yeah. There's from the data that we have. Like I don't have any recordings for BIA or body weight. And there doesn't look like there was a blood sample that was processed either, so I'm not sure.
Well, now it shows body weight post ride.
Yeah, post ride 2 hours after completion.
Oh, okay.
Oh, wait a second. No, I think I'm wrong on that. No, you're right. That is the Sunday morning one. J is Sunday morning one, right? No, so we do have that. So, okay. So what's missing then? Right, now that I got my time.
Stuff in front of you. Well, the Saturday a.m.
Right, there was no blood sample on Saturday a.m.
Okay, but the horse was taken up, so I didn't know if it just...
Oh, that's right. And none of the horses had a blood sample taken at...
Oh, okay.
On
all
Saturday
right.
morning, and that's because they're all taken off.
So high.
Getting ready.
Okay.
We tried to get body weights and BA from as many horses as we could, and yours was one of, I would say, a few. At best, we got maybe a quarter of the horses that were in the study to come by on the Saturday morning.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Thank you so much. We appreciate your time. All right. Bye-bye.
Thank all of you. Do consult with the veterinary contact or your personal vet or both, and we will be having follow-up calls when we have synthesis of the data, so stay tuned in your email for that. Best of luck in the ride season.
Thank you, guys. All right.
Thanks so much.
Bye.